If we are going to experience the benefits of 2025 as McKinsey defined it, or address the issues that we heard today in the last session, we wanted to have a practical, pragmatic way of getting to what the barriers are in order to be able to achieve that. And so my name is Vince Albanese. I'm the CEO of Haven Health, which is in the blockchain notifications and logistics business. And I'm joined with my colleague, Scott Stewie, the president of Direct Trust, to talk about seamless, safe notifications and what that means. And we're calling that a new modality. So if you ask this, what should be a relatively simple question here, of how can we remind a patient that they need to take their AIDS medication? There is complexity built into that all over the place. And so while we would like to talk about the grand scheme of what could and should happen, the subject of we is a problem. So there isn't a problem if everybody buys into the Amazon model and they all do one thing, right? But the definition of we is all of us working together around this, which is why these conferences and things are important. The other thing is, as soon as you start to get into AIDS and behavioral health and the other things that really impact us as human beings, as things go, this information is being restricted in all kinds of ways. So this problem is extraordinarily difficult to tackle. So why is that? So what we have here is not a problem with underrepresentation by IT or technical staff, or it's not a problem with people volunteering or working together. We have a major logistics problem in healthcare. And that is the problem that Haven, Direct Trust, and all the entities working together are attempting to solve. The issue has to do with local optimization versus global optimization here. So until we begin to look at the entire problem from end to end, as it's described, and to work through the logistics there, we're really never going to get to a solution that's meaningful. What local optimization means is that if you're a payer and you develop the world's best healthcare portal for handling prior authorizations, but the doctor has six of them they have to deal with, then you are locally optimizing, right? If you're the American Medical Association working on mechanisms to reduce prior authorization, stick with that example for a second, and you come back with something that is biased toward the doctors, then you are locally optimizing. So we're working on solving this kind of a problem. What is the definition of why, if we don't do that, it's an issue? It's because you generate waste in the system. So I'm a student of Ellie Goldratt, which just indicates my age, I guess, on throughput, theory of constraints, and those types of things. So fundamentally, global optimization is what we should be after in a healthcare setting, and it's our mission here. So I'm joined by Scott Stewie, the president of Direct Trust, and we are working together. The point that this has to be solved from an industry consortium perspective is absolutely critical, and Scott, in my opinion, manages and runs one of the best in the country in that area. So the question that Scott asks is the kind of the dirty secret in how we operate, which is it's really the friction that comes from us not wanting to share PII that is preventing PHI from being distributed here. Competitors, political pressure, all kinds of things stop us from wanting to talk about who those patients really are. So that is the problem that we're working together on. And Scott, I'll turn it over to you for a market summary.
Thanks, Vince. So, appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit with you all. So I've been roughly 30 years in the industry. I've worked as an interoperability expert, whatever that means, for a really long time, starting in the interface realm, system-to-system communication, all the way through today where, you know, regional and national networks are starting to play a huge role. And as we've gone through this exercise, from the very beginning of my work in the days when I installed my first master patient index system in 1999, just about the same place as where we are with regard to patient matching, which is to say, in a patient matching, I remember, is the problem of trying to get the artifact Additionally, you have this problem of what I'd call duplication, where in an individual institution, frequently up to 20% of the records are duplicates, which is to say, there's more than one me in the system, and 20% of the records are in fact duplicates of others. That's actually pretty typical. In fact, in some large IDNs, that's a small number. So that's not actually a patient matching problem. I think of that as an identity problem. So these are the four big problems that we have yet to solve, fundamentally. So I was involved in the Commonwealth effort when it first launched. Identity was at the center of what it is Commonwealth wanted to do, and Commonwealth hasn't really quite gotten there, and no one has yet. So the question of identity is actually still a fundamental issue. Next is consent. So consent, Vince talked a little bit about that. Consent's straightforward for treatment between providers as long as the data is not sensitive in any way. So if it's sensitive in any way, if it's substance abuse treatment data, if it's behavioral health data, if all of that data actually needs to have different things, consents in different states, which is a complex problem. If you got explicit consent on everything, then it would work in all states. But in the absence of that, the rules are very different. The fourth is what I call this tension between mass centralization on the one hand and mass synchronization. So if I'm going to centralize everything, if I've got one system, if everybody's on one platform, I only have to get that system to work together. If, on the other hand, I've got lots and lots of systems, pardon me, I'm going to have to get all of those systems to synchronize. And the more of those systems there are, the harder that synchronization problem is. This tension remains in our world and is actually codified in TEFCA. So if you're a reader of TEFCA, you appreciate that TEFCA basically set up the tension very, very dynamically by saying that there will be a relatively small number of highly centralized organizations that will nonetheless synchronize between each other for the purpose of patient identification, not for the records themselves, but for the patients. So this is the challenge we have. So if we're going to get past this, the fundamental issue is to grapple with a solution that might actually start with the identity problem. So if we actually build a system that was built on the notion that identity was at the source of what it is we needed to do first, that identity could basically solve the patient matching problem. And by identity, I mean, let's get it right to start. Let's identity-proof people when they show up, wherever they show up, but then also issue them a credential that can be utilized in various settings. So that's what kind of the solution might look like. And then if in the process of doing that, we actually also involve the patient in the process and could capture their consent in the process of enrolling them in such an activity, enrolling them in a payer portal, for example. If a payer portal represents an identity-proofing event that could be brought up to a certain level that would be adequate for the purposes of issuing a credential, which, by the way, they do already. Okay? They issue credentials to get access to your EOB. That's PHI. So you're getting access to PHI with the credential that you get in an identity-proofing. That's probably not quite up to the standard of IAL2 under NIST's expectations, but it's pretty good. So could it be tuned up? Yes, it could. And if it were, and you captured the patient's identity and their consent at the same moment, and then issued them a digital credential at that moment, you could get a lot done, and a lot would work better. So that's the fundamental thought. Now, notifications as a modality is a little different than query and push. So push is what, so direct trust is the, we run the direct trust network, which is to say we're the operators of the, or our members are the operators of a network that run basically a billion transactions a year at this point through being pushed back and forth by people who know who they're sending to because of our trust framework. That's different than query, which is, the patients are in front of me, where are the records? And it's also different from this notifications idea. Notifications is different because it involves all this interest in communications. So notifications are really of greatest interest to the payer. The payer would like to have notifications on virtually anything that happens to their patient, but they'd also like to have the ability to communicate to the patient and the provider in order to, you know, aggressively manage care. So that's the kind of the subtext of what a federated subscription-based notifications model would do from a value proposition standpoint. Starting with the notion of identity first, simplifying the problem of MPI, because MPI is frankly a costly aspect of how we do interoperability today. So skipping over the technical world to a world in the future where everyone's communicating by fire or other mechanisms that are point-to-point without necessary intermediaries. How does that look in a world where I've got this sort of mass synchronization that is an expectation? This is, I think, the context we're looking at kind of laying. The interesting thing about working with Vince, so Vince is a blockchain company now, so Vince works for a blockchain company. Blockchain has a potential role to play around undermining this fundamental tension between centralization and synchronization for the purposes of something that would be manageable. So if you start with something like the subscriptions on a patient, you could have the subscriptions contain the who, what, where, and why about this particular subscription. Would be the what identity proof individual is it about, what identity proof individual is interested in receiving information about this, and then what do I want to know about, and is consent obtained. So all of that could be managed in a distributed ledger. So this is, I think, what makes distributed ledgers most useful, is that they have this ability for different authorities to manage a single asset. This is, again, the challenge. If payers don't want to share 300 million records, or frankly, whether they want to share them or not, it's just tactically challenging to provide 300 million records and then update them, about 20% of them or whatever, a year on a day when open enrollment concludes. And this is the challenge of, you know, if they can manage that in their own environment, in their own node of a distributed ledger, that's the thinking about how this might work. So I'll turn it back over to Vince, and he's getting considerably more tactical than my finance guys have.
So that's the subject of being practical here. The ability to inherit over a decade worth of work by over 100 organizations, and the ability to work with the nation's security infrastructure for the transport of healthcare messaging today, and with a group of people who already understand what federation means, lends itself to partnership with blockchain. So the practical side of what we're doing here is, the truth of the matter is, on the progression of where what happens with a blockchain, there is the newness and gee whiz cool stuff side of this. But the truth of the matter is, what blockchain has done for us in the beginning was it caused people to get together and talk about what that means. In our case, our get-to-market strategy has been the medical doctors, the medical societies in various states. Delaware has been our first use case. So the interesting thing is that we're finding that small states are taking a progressive posture. They want to be first with blockchain. Delaware was the first state to put their hand up and do something with blockchain, and it's now moving across the country that way. So the medical doctors in those states, as part of that expansion, have adopted this strategy and understand that the goal here really is to reduce uncertainty in what happens. The problem with uncertainty is that it causes waste. So when a patient doesn't know what's about what to happen next, what do? They pick up the phone, call their primary care physician, who doesn't have anybody to answer the phone, who calls back, and the cycle just starts over and over again. It works the same way with the payer. It works its way. It's rife through this, full of waste. Uncertainty, we believe, is the root cause of waste in healthcare. The way to alleviate that problem is to do something that sits over the top, that opens up free communication. And we believe the way to facilitate that is to not reinvent all that infrastructure. But who would you trust with that? What company could put their hand up and say that they want to own that? It has to be done through the industry. And in our opinion, that organization already exists and is run by this gentleman. So in the state of Delaware, we have managed, and I believe this is historic, And yet the Hospital Association, the Medical Society, the Delaware Health Information Network, the state government, to all sit around one table and talk about one set of problems. And in their particular case, it's focused on prior authorization. So with this group sitting together, actually working, talking as human beings, with the technology being what Scott, the challenge to me was, can you federate the source of truth out there? So that's what the blockchain is going to do, and it's going to let all the rest of these pieces operate and flow like they used to. So that is how things are moving at a specific level. It is a subscription-based federated notification system running over the back of the nation's existing healthcare infrastructure as deployed by the HISPs and the work for Direct Trust. So on the subject of practicality, so if it's a modality, what is it fixing? So there are four takeaways, and I will credit another thought leader for me, Dr. Gideon Greenspan. So we're coming down this path, and there are four legitimate takeaways that come out of this. First is, let's acknowledge that there is risk with blockchain, and the projects you need to start, we have run head-on into, we're already doing that 1,000 times, right? So that is not the place to go. For some entity or institution that already is a trusted intermediary is not the place to be displaced right out of the gate. So we're working to look for new applications out there, lesson number one. Lesson number two is the blockchain will always be slower, less scalable, and more complex because you're deploying more nodes. However, there is an ROI to be determined. That ROI comes from commercial. Industries afraid to have too much power on one hand. Regulatory, cost of an audit or compliance sometimes exceeds the cost of deployment. Political factors, no one wants to host that data in one place because of the risk. So you look for those kinds of things and it lends itself to blockchain. We believe that we are at that stage in the curve on adoption for blockchain on a wider scale. Number three is that this to us is really a data play. So, and what that means is it is different than an asset-based transaction on a blockchain. When you're replicating data, everybody is getting a copy or a pointer to the copy of that. So we are not doing any, there's no smart contracts, certainly no cryptocurrency, none of those things play, because in this case, all we're doing is we're really making sure that we are replicating data in a reliable, safe, and immutable manner. Number four is that it isn't really so much about transformation and revolution. We're talking about where we're going to be in 2025. I think that's the appropriate time frame. So this is slow adoption by risk-averse institutions where the privacy of our data as patients comes together. We want to be able to answer that question we asked at the beginning, that the patient, the AIDS patient, should be able to get from any institution. So if you're Apple and you can go end-to-end, you have the problem solved, you really don't need any of this. But we believe the world is going to always have institutions that need to interoperate, that need to be able to communicate with each other. And as such, the need to federate that, we think is paramount and critical, and the blockchain plays an important role there. So I will say that when I first approached Scott with the idea of a blockchain a year ago, that this is a long-term Cerner employee, ex-Cerner employee here, and I was skeptical even in the beginning. He's seen a lot of technology come and go. But this idea has really germinated in a way that, truthfully, getting Scott to a blockchain conference is a big deal. But it's indicative of the adoption of these kinds of technologies as a technology, not as pixie dust or something you're going to sprinkle over something to affect the world. So we're doing practical, pioneering work. We're excited to be here. And Scott, thank you for the efforts of you and your entire organization in supporting this idea of federating it.
Well, just by way of closing, yes. So I think the notion that it's the things we already have lying around. So there are lots and lots of organizations that today deploy notification systems. There are hundreds of platforms and points. So the question of could you actually maintain those existing connections and allow for them to share a source of truth So the combination of a blockchain-based subscription database and a trust framework that enables the exchange across that model that is in existence today, which is Direct Trust, is, I think, a powerful opportunity we have. So using the existing trust framework and the existing infrastructure of the 20 to 40 odd ISPs that might participate in that in such an activity basically could be the platform, the federated platform, the collaborative platform that enables this kind of nationwide notifications model, as opposed to one that would be based on a single platform or on the idea that the platforms that are there have to actually duplicate everything in their system constantly to one another. So those are that's the thinking about why blockchain. That's why I'm a recent economist. Thanks very much.
I would like to close with this thought here, is that I'm an active volunteer with Direct Trust. We're working on national standards of trust and instant messaging and important things in a healthcare setting. Scott and I also serve on the board of the Discover Alliance, which is another 501c6 that is working to enable discovery across the healthcare ecosystem. That has some very important players participating in that also, and I would encourage you to look at both of those consortiums as individuals work to help with federation and have us work together instead of this idea of, as you can tell, I'm solidly against local optimization when trying to fix U.S. healthcare. So thank you for your time.
The 2019 Converge to Accelerate conference is brought to you by IEEE, the world's largest technical professional organization for the advancement of technology, Boehringer Ingelheim, passionately working to improve healthcare, NASCO, advancing digital health together.